Welcome to Bruderhof Radio, a bi-monthly program broadening the bounds of discourse on progressive thought and action. I'm your host, Andrew Zimmerman.
If we're really going to pay homage to the spirit of the American Revolution of the 1770s, I think what we ought to do is continue it, that we ought to, having broken the British connection and outlawed monarchism in the United States and having abolished chattel slavery in the United States, we ought to move forward and get rid of the rule of capitalists in the United States.
Although we celebrate the independence of our nation every 4th of July, the true meaning of this national holiday is rarely discussed at any length. Today on Bruderhof Radio, we'll talk with Chris Mahon about what really happened during the American Revolution of the 1770s and what the struggle for independence from Britain can teach us today. Mahon, a writer and historian for the People's Tribune newspaper, based in Chicago, is dedicated to teaching the people's history in the tradition of better-known scholars like Howard Zinn. Mahon argues that today, in a nation governed by a small economic elite, we must again wage a war of independence from global capitalism. Chris, this is the weekend of July 4th, what we call Independence Day, a celebration of the American Revolution, which started with the Declaration of Independence in 1776. And back in the 1770s, the Patriots, I guess as they were called, they challenged the American people, saying, what do we need a king across the ocean for? We're not part of that royalist monarchist system. We need to start our own government and get independence. And you're saying that today we need to challenge the workers and the lower class that we are being ruled by a capitalist system that we're not part of. Could you elaborate on that?
Yes. Well, I think that the way you described it is exactly right, that in the 1770s, people were willing to listen to new ideas, that certain political forces stepped forward, and they said, as you put it, that we don't have to have a monarchy anymore, that we are here in North America. We're practically independent of the King of England anyway. The whole concept of monarchy is morally illegitimate, and we should strike for independence. And the person who really stands out in doing this in history is Thomas Paine, the author of Common Sense. And in particular, that pamphlet is really the place where the new ideas of the American Revolution are most clearly expressed. And it seems to me that today we have to build on that spirit obviously the United States is an independent country, independent of Britain in the national sense. But we have a situation. Paine wasn't simply talking about independence in the sense of breaking the British connection and ending monarchism. He was talking about creating a whole new world. His famous phrase in Common Sense is, we hold in our hands the power to make the world over again. A time such as our time has not existed since the time of Noah. And if you look at the reality today, that while we don't have monarchism in the sense of other than the tabloids, it's not really an issue to people here whether Prince William has turned 18 or not. It doesn't have any legal effect on us. We have the control of the society by a tiny handful of people. 1% of the U.S. population this year will have as many after-tax dollars to spend as the bottom 100 million people in the United States. That one out of every five children goes to bed hungry in the United States, that clearly we have an elite in this country. Clearly we have a situation in which a tiny handful of people, what in the 1930s were sometimes referred to as economic royalists, control the society. And if we're really going to pay homage to the spirit of the American Revolution of the 1770s, I think what we ought to do is continue it, that we ought to, having broken the British connection and outlawed monarchism in the United States and having abolished chattel slavery in the United States, we ought to move forward and get rid of the rule of capitalists in the United States.
The American Revolution was actually premised, I guess, it was actually based on you know, this new idea that government is not sacrosanct, that people have a right to revolt when they believe their best interests are not represented by the government class. In fact, it says in the Declaration of Independence that whenever any form of government becomes destructive, it is actually the right of the people to alter or abolish that government. But what it seems to me is lately, we as the people have been duped into believing that this electoral process we go through every year is the only form of revolution that we're allowed. Why have we been duped into believing that? And what do we need to do to maybe have a more effective turnover of government?
Well, I think you're exactly right about that passage in the Declaration of Independence. In fact, I'm looking at it now, and not only does it say that people have a right, it says that they have a duty. I mean, the passage itself says that, if I could just read it, it says, "Prudence indeed will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes, and accordingly, all experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty, to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security." I think that today we do see, many people do see, the electoral process as being the only way in which society can be changed. But I think if you look at the reality of elections under this system, that, I mean, first of all, you have to have millions of dollars to run in the elections itself. That even then, if you look at the experience of other societies, even when someone is elected to office in a capitalist society and attempts to bring about a revolution within the electoral system, that the capitalist class will move against them using military force. And I think the classic example in recent years is the example of Chile and what happened to the Popular Unity government and its head, Salvador Allende. And so I think that the thing that we've got to say to people is that this passage in the Declaration of Independence is correct, that people have not only a right, but a duty to take a stand against a system which evinces a design to reduce them to under absolute despotism. And the question that I would ask today is, don't we see that situation unfolding before us today? I mean, if you look at the police violence, if you look at the systematic gutting of all the social legislation of the New Deal era and the Great Society era, you look at the Supreme Court decisions undermining democratic rights, look at the growth of executions in this country. I mean, don't we see a design on the part of the capitalist class to eliminate, for all practical purposes, the democratic rights of the Bill of Rights, which were only put in the Constitution as a result of struggle from below, and really to a design on the part of the capitalist class to move us towards absolute despotism.
Chris, you mentioned police brutality, and I'm just thinking that I see parallels today where perhaps we as people or as activists on the left have been trained, or perhaps a lot of us are focused on blaming individuals like corrupt and brutal policemen rather than, you know, going after the system as a whole that supports these policemen. And that's reminding me of in the American Revolution where the colonists tarred and feathered the tax collectors, you know, fairly early on, but it took them a while to realize that, you know, it was the entire British government that they needed to revolt against. Do you see any more parallels?
Very much so. I think that that's a very good analogy, that in the beginning of the American Revolution, the people of the 13 colonies were opposed to certain specific legislative acts of the British Parliament. I mean, they thought at first that their enemy was the British Parliament alone, and that the king himself didn't support this legislation, and they were simply trying to readjust and modify their relationship to the mother country of Britain. And it was only as a result of the struggle unfolding, and in particular the introduction of these new ideas by revolutionary propagandists like Thomas Paine, that people began to see that the problem was the system itself. It wasn't just, you know, Grenville, the king's minister, or any of these other ministers, but it was the entire system of monarchism itself, and that system was illegitimate. And what the American Revolution gave to the world was the idea, the moral position, that monarchism is wrong and that colonialism is wrong. And that's the great positive legacy of the American Revolution. And I think that the situation that we have today is that people begin to fight, understandably, instinctively, and they fight against the evil that's right in front of them. If they're being harassed by the police, if they're being laid off of their job, from their job, whatever, they fight against those particular things. But the demand before us today, I think before thinking and conscientious people today, is to look at the quality of the problem. And as you said, we have a situation today where we're seeing a systematic rise in police violence, a systematic attack on democratic rights. And this is coordinated, and it's a result of the fact that you have a tiny handful of people that controls the society, and they can't afford to grant democracy to the great majority anymore, because you have a situation where, with the introduction of these qualitatively new productive forces of electronics and computers, they are not going to be able to employ people the way they were in the past. They're not going to be able to give people the good industrial jobs, the well-paying industrial jobs in the United States that existed in the past. And as a result of that, they're not going to be able to educate people, and they're going to have to move to controlling people through force and getting people used to control through force. And that's the source of the problem. So if we're going to solve the problem, we have to solve it by not fighting just the effects, but fighting the very root cause of the problem itself, which is that society is controlled by this tiny handful of millionaires and billionaires.
Do you see the recent protests in Washington against the IMF and the protests last November in Seattle against the World Trade Organization? Do you see that as perhaps the beginning of that, a broader moral, you know, opposition to this vast global capitalist system?
I think that the protests in Seattle and in Washington were very, very good. I was very happy to see those protests. I do think that even with, you know, even in protesting the World Trade Organization and the International Monetary Fund, that we should keep in mind that those two institutions are symptoms of the disease and not the disease itself. That we've got to reach outward to new forces, even beyond the people who participated in those protests. And I think we have to do what Thomas Paine did, which is his great contribution was that he wrote this pamphlet that was addressed to the average person in the 13 colonies, and it started from what they understood, and it addressed the issues that kept them from being in favor of independence and removed those obstacles. And I think that what we need today is people to fan out and to agitate and to propagandize the American people as a whole, the great majority of them. And just as Paine said, why do we have to owe allegiance to a king in England who we'll never see, who himself isn't English? I mean, he's from the German aristocracy. And what is moral about that? What is just about that unequal system where someone becomes a head of state simply because their father was the head of state? That we have to today talk to the average person in America and say, you know, why should we have a situation where some people have millions and billions and other people are are going to bed hungry. One out of every five children in America goes to bed hungry. How long are we going to allow that situation to continue? So I think that Seattle and Washington, D.C. were a good start, but we have to reach out to forces even beyond the forces that were there.
You're listening to historian Chris Mahan of the People's Tribune on Bruderhof Radio. So you see that there needs to be perhaps a more concerted and sustained effort on the part of those of us who believe this way to, you know, consistently reach out to middle-class Americans and continue making them aware of this?
Yes, I think that I mean, the term middle class, increasingly I think there's, if by middle class we're talking about people at a in between the very rich and the poor, that the middle class is shrinking and to a certain extent being eliminated, and that what we've got to do is we've got to talk to the average person in America. And I think that programs like this are a good example. I think that the kind of protest that took place in Seattle and Washington did get on the news and spark a public discussion in this country, and that's very good. And we need more of that, and we need more radio programs and more newspaper articles and more people speaking around the country. And part of what we have to do, I think, is raise the question, particularly on occasions like this, on July 4th. I mean, on July 4th, 1850, Frederick Douglass, on that holiday, that was just a couple of months after it was clear that the Fugitive Slave Act was going to be passed in the United States. And Frederick Douglass gave this famous speech in which he said, "What to a slave is the 4th of July? You know, what does it mean? How can a slave possibly celebrate the 4th of July? That the 4th of July celebrations of the United States are nothing but vanity for a slave." And I think that the question, you know, that we have to ask today to America is, you know, what's the 4th of July to the family of Shaka Sankofa, you know, originally known as Gary Graham? I mean, what kind of 4th of July celebration are they going to be having this weekend? You know, what's the 4th of July to the one out of every five children in America who are hungry? And how have we honored the traditions of the American Revolution? You know, do we really remain true to them, or when we, you know, explode our fireworks? Or is the real act of celebration of the 4th of July to continue what was revolutionary and what was done in the 1770s, and to essentially finish the job, and having gotten rid of kings, having gotten rid of slave owners, get rid of the rule of capitalists in the United States? And if we can find a way to say that in a way that the average person will understand it, I think that we'll be on our way to doing what needs to be done.
I think it's true that you know, the way the 4th of July and Independence Day are celebrated now is different from the original meaning of the, you know, the American Revolution. I think what we're seeing now is more and more a celebration of America's status as kind of an imperial superpower, which was, you know, what we were revolting against in the first place. How is it possible to get back to that, the celebration of true independence, as you mentioned, without perhaps celebrating, you know, the violence and bloodshed that the American empire is built on at this point?
Well, I think we have to make a distinction between the two Americas. There's a tendency a lot of times to talk about the United States of North America as if it is one entity, and American history, United States of North America history, as if it's one thing. And in fact, from the very beginning, there's always been two Americas. I mean, really, there were two American revolutions. I mean, there was the American Revolution of George Washington, who was the richest man in the 13 colonies, and there was the American Revolution of Crispus Attucks. You know, Attucks was a runaway slave. He was the first man to die in the American Revolution. And what we've got to do is fight for the position that we represent this side of American history that begins with the resistance by the Native Americans to the settlement in Jamestown, and, you know, the first attack on that settlement took place just a few days after the settlement was established and continues through the Boston Massacre of March 5th, 1770, and on through the abolitionist movement and the Haymarket Martyrs, and then down to today. And we have to claim what's good in American history. I know of some people who take the position, well, we shouldn't celebrate July 4th, but I think that rather than taking that position, that we ought to instead take the position that July 4th belongs to the real revolutionaries, and that it's not shouldn't be a day for bragging and chauvinism, but it should be a day for remembering the revolutionary roots of the United States.
Chris, before we close here, I do have one more definition, perhaps you could call it, and I'd like you to talk a little bit about what you feel is true patriotism. I know with July 4th, that's often sort of a day of extreme national pride, and obviously, at least for you and me, there's a lot of things that the United States has done recently that we're not proud of. And what would you define true patriotism as?
I think the true patriotism is honoring and respecting what's good in the American heritage, and that means the heritage of struggle and the heritage of the dispossessed standing up to the powers that be. I mean, there are certainly a lot of things, many, many things that the capitalist class of the United States has done, which, you know, are utterly despicable and shameful. But again, I think we have to make a distinction between one America and the other, that real patriotism means respecting and honoring and remembering what the little people throughout American history have done, what the revolutionaries have done. I mean, you look at the American Revolution of the 1770s, that was the first revolution against colonialism. It inspired every other revolution against colonialism. I have an article here about the history of Vietnam that talks about the fact that the Declaration of Independence of Vietnam, which was written in August, actually it was September 2nd, 1945, that Declaration of Independence begins with the same words as the American Declaration of Independence, that the fight of the people of the 13 colonies for independence to end their colonial relationship with Britain inspired every other anti-colonial revolution in the world. I mean, that part of the American Revolution is something to be proud of. The defiance against what really amounts to police brutality by Crispus Attucks and the other people who were on King Street in Boston on March 5th, 1770, that's something to be proud of. The fight of the abolitionists against slavery is something to be proud of. The efforts of the Wobblies, of the labor organizers of the 1870s and 1880s and on through history, those things are things to be proud of. I mean, all of the efforts of people, you know, throughout the history of the United States, that's the real history of the majority of people in the United States. I mean, noting that there have been times that people have not understood things, have been had their consciousness dulled by imperialist bribery. Still, if you look at the history of the United States, there is this legacy of tremendous defiance of privilege and of tradition. And that is something really good, and we ought to hold on to that and be proud of that. But the way to hold on to it is to continue it. I mean, just as with a skill, you only preserve the skill by putting it to use, I think that if we really want to talk about being patriotic, then we ought to continue the legacy of those who fought against monarchism and fought against slavery. And we ought to fight to abolish the rule of the capitalist class in this country, and that's the real act of patriotism.
So it's, although it's clear that we have not by any means achieved, you know, what the Declaration of Independence calls for, where all men are created and treated as equals and where everyone has an equal right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, it is important to remember what good has been done in that line. What's your hope for the future? Do you envision the society someday actually being in existence?
Very much so, yes. I think that the profound changes that have gone on in the world have really made it possible, in a certain sense, for the ideals of the American Revolution and of the abolitionists to finally be realized. I mean, when Thomas Paine said, "We hold in our hands the power to make the world over again," I think he really wanted a just world. I don't think he wanted to have a situation where the Virginia slave owners controlled this country. I don't think he wanted a world where Shaka Sankofa is executed by poisonous injection and the Texas parole board doesn't even have the decency to meet. They fax their decision to each other. And I don't think that's what he was fighting for, or what the abolitionists were fighting for, who ended up, their efforts ended up abolishing chattel slavery, but not abolishing the inequality of African Americans. But if you look at the situation today, I think that we finally have the actual material conditions where nobody has to be hungry, nobody has to be ill-housed, nobody has to be uneducated. I mean, we have the technology to create houses in a matter of hours, to grow food in laboratories, and that it could be possible to have a just world, to have the dream that people have dreamt of for years in this country come to pass. But the thing that's standing in the way is this control of the United States by this tiny handful of millionaires and billionaires. And that's why we've got to get out there and talk to the average person in America and show them that that's the source of the problem. But the way we do this has got to be done in the form, I think, of uniting with the legitimate side of their patriotism, the good side of their patriotism, and in effect saying, you know, what Langston Hughes said in that famous poem about "Let America be America again, the America that never was but yet must be, the land where every man is free." That is possible today.
You've been listening to Chris Mahon, writer and people's historian, on Bruderhof Radio. To contact the People's Tribune, call 1-800-691-6888. Bruderhof Radio is a production of the Bruderhof Communities, a communal movement based on Christ's Sermon on the Mount, in particular the teachings concerning brotherly love and love of enemies, mutual service, nonviolence, and the refusal to bear arms. Money and possessions are pooled voluntarily, and in turn each member is provided for and cared for. For more information about the Bruderhof Communities and Bruderhof Radio, call us at 1-800-778-8461. Again, that's 1-800-778-8461.